Welcome to Bedhampton Church. Contact us at www.bedhampton.church. But for now, let's continue that journey with this input.
So, as I said, we're back in our series on the Book of Exodus after our short break for Easter. And before Easter, we learned, of course, that it's the second book in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, as we call it. Polly took us through how Moses was born, raised up in Pharaoh's palace. You remember the whole reed basket and all that. Murdered an Egyptian and ran away to Midian, where he met his wife and his shepherd father-in-law. Then we discovered how Moses was called by God to do a job, argued with him, but then was commissioned by the great I Am to set his people free. Finally, before Easter, we celebrated Easter, Moses and Pharaoh met for the first time, and Moses introduced God to Pharaoh for the first time. All of that is available on the website and well worth a catch up if you would like to do that. But today we head into the next section. Today, just before we get to that famous part where all the plagues come next week, we are reading Exodus 6, 2 to 7, 13. Well, we didn't quite read all of that, did we? But we're reading a portion of that. That's the area we're covering today. And we're going to whiz through this because I want to get to one main point at the end. So buckle in and we'll see how we go. If you did read through this section in preparation for today, you might have sat there and thought, this all sounds rather familiar. In chapter 6, verse 2, we hear, as we did in chapter 3, 13, that God's name is Yahweh. Then in chapter 6, verse 5, we read how God sees the misery of people. But we've already heard that in chapter 3, 7 to 9. In chapter 6, 12, Moses reiterates once again his inability to speak in public. But again, we went through all of that in chapter 4. And one final example for you. In chapter 7 today, we hear how Moses is given Aaron as a helper. But again, we've already heard that in chapter 4. Lots of repetition going on. But by now, you'll remember that this is because we have a number of stories coming together, a number of traditions coming together to make one united, edited document, making it not less true, but actually more true for us as we see history through different perspectives of God's people, showing that God is love. And after all that reiteration and foundation setting, we dive off into a family tree of Aaron and Moses, who of course are brothers. The main reason for the family tree, which we didn't hear today, but is in that section, is to show that actually they are from the priestly line of Levi. So we have Moses and Aaron's father, Amram, to Kohath, to Levi, to show that they are God's ordained priestly line. So he's setting them up once again to be the people that he wants them to be. And then we get to the interesting bit today that I wanted to talk about, the face-off, as I've been referring to it. Pharaoh finally meets God through Moses. God reminds Moses before he goes for the face-off that he is like a little god to Pharaoh. He is representing Yahweh, the Lord, and he is to go with Aaron to say, set my people free. And then just before he heads off all pumped up, God does this one more little pep talk and drops this bombshell when he says, oh, by the way, I will harden Pharaoh's heart and he won't listen to you. Okay. So you're better to go off and do a job, and God's immediately saying it's not going to work. So Aaron and Moses do trot off to Pharaoh, and true to form, of course, we heard it doesn't work. They perform some great ordained miracles, the whole snake and coming out of the staff routine, and remembering the snake is sort of harking back to the devil in Genesis. But then the Pharaoh's sorcerers themselves do similar things, and they also perform through the dark arts, as it were, the same sort of things. And despite the fact that Moses' snake eats the sorcerer's snake, we read, yet Pharaoh's heart became hard, and he would not listen to them, just as the Lord had said. A quick summary of where we were. There is so much that we could try and dig out of these passages, but do you know the thing that jumps out for me is the elephant in the room? And I'm not the first by a long way to notice this, but the elephant in the room for me is, why would God harden Pharaoh's heart? Why would this loving God that I bang on about all the time set Pharaoh up for failure? Harden his heart. Isn't he trying to reach Pharaoh as much as he would us? And the answer, as it so often is with these things, is another question. Did God actually set up the Pharaoh to fail? Did God harden Pharaoh's heart? Or had he already made his own decision? We could jump back before Easter to reveal the answer to this. Jump back to Exodus 5, when Moses and Pharaoh first met, where we hear Pharaoh say, "Who is this Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go." Who is this God? I am God. Who is this God that I would need him? I am greater than he. That's what the Pharaoh is saying. Pharaoh rejected God, and so God allowed him to do so. To be clear, this is not God's normalized character. God is a God who seeks us, isn't he? He comes looking for us. He hangs on the cross for us. We've just celebrated all. This is not God's normal operation. But here, this is God reacting to someone who has made a decision to turn away from him. Someone who has been exposed to the love from the creator of the universe. They've been told about it, and he's made a decision to go his own way. Pharaoh is seen as, and believes he is, a god, small g. This is the battle of the pretend god and the one true god. It's a wake-up call. It's Pharaoh's last chance. Now, I've been known to quote Tim Mackey, the theologian, before, but Tim Mackey says this about this interaction. He says, when Yahweh says he's going to harden Pharaoh's heart, he's not hardening the heart of an innocent man who will have chosen to repent. Generations of pharaohs have oppressed Israel and others and done incredible evil by this time. Yahweh is accelerating the path of an empire that has already chosen its way forward into the world. I love Tim Mackey. He makes theology understandable to me. Which got me to thinking. I was visiting my new grandchild yesterday and my other grandson, Caleb. And Mum and Dad had a bit of a rough night with both boys waking up in different times. And I'm sure you parents would... So we decided to take Caleb out for a stroll and basically try and tire him out so he slept well last night, which he did, by the way. But anyway. And it got me to thinking, I love Caleb to bits. I want to be a loving grandfather. It's obvious, isn't it? You know that. I love him to bits. I do all I can do to encourage him to become the God-ordained person that he is meant to be. But yesterday, if Caleb had made a decision to run out into the road as we were walking to the park, I would shout and scream at him. I would grab him by the arm, and if I need to, I would hurt him to get him back again, to avoid the inevitable consequence of running into danger, into oncoming traffic. Would I then suddenly be a less loving grandfather? I don't think I would be, would I? It's a wake-up call for Caleb. It's a wake-up call to avoid the even greater danger of death. That's what I would be. It's not my normal expression of love for Caleb, but it's an expression of love that I'm willing to go to, if I need to avoid his death. God's mode of operation is not normal like this. It's love beyond our comprehension. That's his normal mode. That when we are insistent on heading into danger, He's not beyond shouting at us or using evil that he doesn't cause, but is willing to use to wake us up when our hearts are hardened. That's what happened to Pharaoh. Which is all very interesting, but of course, really, you know, the thing is, what does this mean to us today? And I think, I could drag out so much, but for me, this is obvious. Perhaps it's even the elephant in the room for us. How is our heart with God? Are we, or are you, like the person who builds their life on the rock of Jesus? Is your heart aligned with him in everything that you do? Or is it just some parts of your life that are aligned to Jesus? When Jesus comes looking for you and I, is our response like the Pharaoh's? Who is the Lord? Do we rely on what we can do? Do we trust him in the good times, but in the bad times go, okay, well, now I'll be God for a while? I wonder if there's any part of our lives where our hearts are hardened. Or is our response a response of gratitude that says, Jesus died on the cross for us. We are so grateful for that. That's what we're to ask ourselves this morning. Does our heart overflow for praises? Does the good fruit come out of us? Or do we sometimes question who is the Lord? When God comes to you and I, do we say, who is the Lord? Or do we take a moment and say, thank you for saving me?
You have been listening to Bedhampton Church. Our prayer is that this helps you journey with Jesus and serve your community by sharing God's love and friendship. Subscribe and join us for more discussion at www.bedhampton.church. All material Creative Commons copyright. Contact us for more details.